We hope you enjoy the following presentation of Understanding Rudyard, Part 2, by Leila Rael. This was the first talk on Saturday morning, September 24, 1983, at the RITA conference in Palo Alto, California. This recording is 30 minutes long. This audio is brought to you by RITA, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity, a nonprofit public benefit corporation dedicated to disseminating the work and essential message of Dane Rudyard. All material is copyrighted by Leila Rudyard Hill. If you'd like to learn more about RITA or make a donation towards supporting the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com. And now, Leila Rael.
But always then, at each step, being able to interpret what was happening anew, according to those principles, and not remain bound to a formulation he had had earlier. So for myself, I think the main thing is essentially to try to develop that capacity. And insofar as how all of us work together to do that, I mean, I think that is one of the main challenges, is to be able to create in some way an affiliation, and I think that's a good word, an affiliation of people based on affinity, each of whom is trying to do that same function, none of whom are trying to go the institutional route, although realizing that in terms of the world, legal matters, social matters, that is a necessary function, and yet keeping that as a necessary function on the side and not allowing that to become the main show. Yes.
I find it's very important what you just said about keeping creative yourself. Because one thing I've observed, of course, with Steiner people, I read Steiner books on art and went to classes, and most of the teachers there who are second-generation teachers really crystallize and do these ideas in a terribly limited way.
Yes.
And it's also very important what you just
said. Yeah. Now, I mean, in a sense, you see, I guess the way I see it is, that falls in a particularly focused way to me, because basically I will be the one who has to deal with the administrative matters and that kind of thing. And yet, by the same token, I think this was one of the things Rudyard was trying to convey in 1975 when he dissolved the International Committee for Humanistic Astrology, was that the same thing falls upon everyone who is attracted to his work and for whom that has been meaningful. The idea of RITA is, in a way, to simply acknowledge that and to create a slightly more structured atmosphere and environment where we keep tabs on each other. Not keep tabs, but, you know, where there can be an interaction and a stimulation of that keeping creative and not ossifying. And also, this another important function I would see is that one of the things that happens oftentimes with second-generation groups is a danger there of, one, either going the popularization route, which that is something that it's not a dogma, but I think it's an important principle Rudyard has stressed. He's never been in favor, for example, of greatly popularizing astrology, although he wrote in popular magazines for many, many years, but he wrote what he wrote. They gave him a forum, and he wrote what he wanted to write. But he's never thought it important to put astrology in the hands of world leaders or that kind of thing, that oftentimes people feel that would be an important thing. From his point of view, if that's a necessary thing in the ecology of the evolution of humanity, that'll happen. You know, and it will happen as a result of somebody reading something that was just there at the time, and one doesn't have to push to do those things. So to avoid the popularization, on the one hand, and I lost my train of thought. There was another one that was something else that we hadn't talked about.
The danger of to second generation.
And the other would be to fold in on itself. Thank you, Gretel. To fold in on itself and essentially to speak to the already convinced. Mm-hmm. Do you see what I mean? Mm-hmm. So there needs to be a delicate balance struck between popularization and in-grouping. Do you see what I mean? And between, well, for example, I mean, this is how things all work out very spontaneously. Last night when we came home, there was a letter in the mail that had come yesterday that while we were all here. Actually, I brought it because I read it to Rudyard last night when we got home, and he said, you should read that to them. He said, it'll come up in the conversation. So here we are. we'll get back to this. Is important too. This is from a person, and I feel kind of funny about this because I won't say his name, I guess, but it's the person who just moved to Madison, Wisconsin. And he writes, Dear Mr. Rudyard, this brief letter is inspired primarily by gratitude to you for the ideas you have expressed in your many writings, which are an important source of guidance to me through the present crisis of my growth. Which, by the way, let me say as an aside, which this is interesting also. We have hundreds and hundreds of letters that many of you, our first contact with you was a letter from Rudyard. And this is not to put anyone down, but you know, all the letters we get are the same letter. Different words, and it's so beautiful. It's the same letter. You don't realize how much we are all connected on that level. I have spent the past 2 months reading Culture, Crisis, and Creativity, deeply moved. While reading, I have repeatedly seen an inner image of you sitting alone at a piano playing majestic tapestries of sound. To me, this is one of your most important books, and it resounds with the same music you have poured forth so abundantly throughout your life. It is a blessing and an inspiration to hear such music. My other reason for writing to you is to ask your blessing for a course I would like to teach on your philosophy this fall at a small holistic counseling center in Madison, where I will also be teaching astrology. My intention is not to lead an exhaustive survey of your writings, nor to present myself as any kind of expert on your work, but rather to provide an opportunity for members of the general public to be introduced to several of your greatest non-astrological philosophical writings. I have enclosed a copy of the advertisements I have written for this and my other courses so that you will get an idea of what I propose to do and of my approach to teaching astrology. I hope that this brief course resume does not grossly misrepresent your ideas and that you will approve of the general perspective I am trying to express in my astrological work. Here, your overall influence should be quite obvious. I feel quite humbled to be presenting your work and to be teaching astrology. The task would perhaps be carried out by someone older and more mature. I am 25 years old. But I do not know of anyone else teaching a course solely devoted to your non-astrological writings, and I feel it is time that somebody do so. And then he has something here about his own chart, why he thinks that's important. I feel a bit remiss in waiting to write to you until just a few weeks before the course is scheduled to begin. I can only say that things have been moving very, very quickly for me. I moved to Madison just 2 months ago, and a place for me to teach opened up suddenly and unexpectedly. I've planned everything quite rapidly, and I did not think to write you until practically the last moment. Nevertheless, I consider my plan to present the course to be contingent upon your approval of the project. I hope this letter finds you enjoying a healthy, peaceful, and creative season of your life. Again, I thank you and salute you for releasing such fertile seeds into the winds of our era. It's a beautiful letter. And I think the important things in there is that there is a person who felt attracted to Rudyard's idea, and whatever the direction of movement is in his life, having an opportunity that came unexpectedly, having that meet something in him that felt everyone is talking about Rudyard's astrology, or many people are, and there's no one dealing with the non-astrological work, putting that together, and then essentially acting on it and seeing what happens. You see, I consider that a kind of ideal balance. And the course resume that he sent, the ideas, anybody can come up and look at it. I won't read it now. But it's really quite good, very clear, very simple, not particularly pretentious or jargon-filled, very clear, very simple, and just whatever opportunity in his life that's presented, being able to make contact with other people who may not have had contact with those kind of ideas otherwise. So that's kind of what I meant by the balance between popularization and folding in on a group that basically talks to itself. And then when that happens, that leads to all that infighting. Because, I mean, in a way, it's sort of like in Alcoholics Anonymous, when they run out of alcoholics in a town, a lot of times someone who's in the group who has been sober for many years has to fall off the wagon so everyone can save him. It's sad, but it's something that happens. And it's the same kind of thing as when you have a group that everyone is talking to each other, only, then there's a tendency to get very picky over those differences of, quote, doctrinal opinion, and then you get schisms and splits and political problems and all of that. And that surely is something that, in terms of Rita, I would definitely like to bypass and avoid. I mean, I don't think any of us need that kind of aggravation, and it's not particularly productive. Okay, so thank you for asking that question. I knew we needed to talk about it. Anybody want to continue this discussion or anything we need to say about this before we move on?
Well, one of the thoughts I had is that relating to the creative aspect of ourselves as the focus, as the main focus of our own lives and living it rather than just discoursing about it would prohibit that kind of consciousness that is just dealing with the thinking. I know that having come across Richard's work years and years ago and being fascinated and attracted to the ideas, over the period of years it seems to unfold in my life, not like a will, I'm going to live that way.
Yeah.
But just because it's involved in the process in me, it unfolds in our life and changes the way we relate and the definitions of our relationships and such. So that I feel very safe in not having to worry about being caught in the schisms and isms of, mm-hmm. of Rijar, because it has a dynamic quality of life rather than simple ideas.
Yeah.
I think that what I was referring to when I asked the question deals not with those people who think as you do mm-hmm. and as you profess, but that by the creation of an organization, those who aren't acting in that way and perceiving that life that way, those are the people who would become associated, who would find safety and sanctuary within the structure of the group, mm-hmm. and who would then potentially lead to such
yeah.
institutionalization on their own, not at the behest of anyone else, including yourself.
Mm-hmm. Right. And we can't do anything about that.
No, it merely
and is. It's important not to do anything about that. I mean, in the sense of not to set up a group or organization that says that this is the right, this is the only thing. I mean, I think Rita can be delineated as a particular organization that Rijar has been involved in the founding of, has known many of us who will be working with Rita and all of that.
Last time he dissolved himself.
That was different. First of all, it was different. Isha was never a legal entity, number one. And it had no... It had no anything. Basically, what it was there wasn't even a word for it really then. It was a very loose network, and the idea was to perform a networking function where Rijar and Tana, his wife at the time, essentially coordinated a mailing list and periodically put out little newsletters and enabled people who lived. It's a function I perform on a very loose, informal basis, which is to keep a geographical mailing list so that if anyone writes from Kansas and says, there's no one in Kansas that I know of who's interested in these kind of things, I can go to the file, and maybe there's three or four cards of people who live in Kansas. And that's essentially what Isha was doing and sending out a little newsletter. But then it became too much for Rijar and Tana to do that, so someone else began to do it, and then he decided to stop, and someone else began to do it, and then there became a difficulty over who was president and who was supposed to be this and that. And that's when Rijar decided that it wasn't useful. The way Rita is set up, I mean, I tried in setting it up legally with the attorney to bypass that sort of thing, which essentially, the way it is set up is that we have no members. We can, if we want to, have members at some point, but we don't have any members because if you have members, you have to have membership qualifications. And how can you decide who's a member? And if you decide who's a member based on money that you pay dues, then what are you going to do with all that money? And what is the membership dues money supposed to go for? And what do the members get in exchange for their dues money? Then you wind up putting on programs and things. Right, and all of that kind of stuff. So that didn't make any sense at all, to have members in that sense. I mean, in the formal legal sense of members. And basically, it's a very vanilla structure. It has one director, who is me, and my feeling about that is that can change at any time. The way it's set up with the government is that, and I think this is very good and you all should know this, is that I can be the sole director of Rita, as long as I, for no purpose whatsoever, ever take a penny out of it. That's fine with me. It's absolutely fine with me. I cannot pay myself a salary. Cannot, Rita cannot be used in the way of a, you know, a tax shelter, ta-da-da-da, whatever kind of thing for it. And none of the other people who function as officers, basically who are at this point appointed by me, can either pay themselves a salary as such until we get enough people so that there would always be 51% of the directors and officers who would be non-salaried, and the other 49% could have salary. So it's the way we've done it that way is legally with money, is to avoid that kind of domination of the thing. And basically what we're trying to do, it was our idea, the people who were first around, which is basically Rudyard, myself, Nikki Michaels, who has really put this conference on. Nikki has been the one to deal with Val Ambrosa, to take all of your registrations, to answer all the questions, to find out about how you get from the airport and how you get back, and to do all of those kind of things. Robert Chambray, who's Secretary Treasurer of RITA, who's dealing with the books. Joseph Jacobs, who is Rajar's and my assistant, who is the genie who keeps everything running, that he's my right arm and a tremendous help. So it's basically us five who, when we started RITA, decided that what we needed to have was a series of booklets that Rajar would write. Premature now, don't do it now, think about it when you get home, would be basically to write us a letter and to tell us, or don't call us because then all of you will call at once, but write a letter and tell us what your experience was and what you would like to see done, what kind of projects are important. And I personally feel it's important. There are certain books of Rajar's that are out of print, because large publishers see them as not commercially viable. I mean, when a book gets to be 12, 13 years old, a publisher doesn't want to keep it on the shelf because they've got, in that time, maybe 200,000 titles that have come out since then. So to keep books in print on a small scale for those people who are interested, who want to have those available, I think that's important. I think that's a reasonable thing to use resources of RITA for, which then if there is money that comes back to from that would cycle back through RITA, those kind of things. So I would appreciate all of your input as to what you think is important for RITA to do and what you would see as directions for it to develop in. Okay? Okay. Yeah, because this is, astrologically speaking, this is the, you know, this is maybe the semi-sextal. The conjunction was Layla getting together with the lawyer, you know, and then this is essentially the first stage of giving substance to a legal entity, a legal structure that is there. Now, see, I can say that, and many of you can smile and know exactly what I mean, because one of the main symbols that Rajar has used that has been important, I see it as the way the order is, concept, idea, symbol, or concept, image, symbol. Concept that turns into a symbol, that turns into a permanent fixture, as it were, in the consciousness, a structure into which other things can come. And I think it's difficult always to say what is the most important of anything. But if I had to say what is the most important concept, image, symbol that Rajar has worked with, I would say that it is the cycle. In the Essential Rajar, I use that quotation from Rajar from Planetarization, where he says that the cycle is, for him, the most inclusive of all symbols, because in it, all symbols can find their relative positions, as it were, their validity and meaning in relation to one another. Everything, anything that happens, you can see why and where it happens if you can see where it belongs in a cycle, what phase it represents in a process of development. He's lived, essentially, this image himself, which has written, by the way, an autobiography that was completed in 1980 and every year until it's published, he'll add little appendices to it. But basically what it is that the way he has structured the book, which I think is indicative of him, is that each part is divided into two parts. First of all, it's divided into cycles, the way he sees the three major cycles of his life, dividing roughly around sort of halfway points between where the Saturn cycles and the divisions of 7 years and the lunation cycle would go because of the particular way they overlap in Rudyard's life. Those turning points are a couple of years apart. So he sees the cycle as sort of right in between, and it basically makes an 8-year cycle rather than a 7, but it's an individualized interpretation of those collectively valid cycles. And what he does for each cycle is to list in the front a list of this is where I went and this is what I did and these are the facts of what happened. And then have a section behind each of those that says, now this is what those things meant and these are the important things that were involved. One of the interesting things about it is that it deals very, very little with my meetings with famous people or where I went and saw so-and-so or such-and-such kind of thing. Because as Rudyard has said, I asked him why he didn't put those kind of stories in, because there are wonderful stories about Rudyard meeting people that you would all be interested in and other people would be interested in. But he said, but those didn't have anything to do with me. They didn't contribute anything to my development. Those weren't meaningful. They were nice, not to put them down, but they were not part of the essence of my life, as he understands it in terms of the cycle. So it's a way, both a concept that he turns outward to the world and looks at culture, civilization, cosmology, and the evolution of humanity on the earth, and something with which he does very much look at his own life and really see things fitting in that way. The main things, it often is, as he was saying last night, there is a great consistency in his work all the way from 1911 on up to 1983. But there is also great flexibility in terms of different ways of formulating essentially the same thing, that when you do formulate it differently, it looks differently from a different point of view. If you start talking to Rudyard, for example, about psychology and levels of things, he will talk about a fourfold level, which Dan Johnson will talk about later this afternoon, the psychological, biological, sociocultural, individual, and transpersonal. But if you start talking from the point of view of cosmology, he'll use a different scheme of levels, one not negating the other, but each fitting the point of view and the level of particular experience that you're dealing with. So that, for example, in Planetarization of Consciousness, when he was dealing with the cycle as an important image, what he basically dealt with was a changing ratio, as it were, between potentiality and actuality, between something in a seed condition germinating and growing and developing to reach an omega condition or a flower condition. In his most recent book, which I'm terribly sorry, I begged the publisher to have it out by now, but it won't be out until November. It's called Rhythm of Wholeness, and it comes full cycle and deals also with the cycle. It deals with cyclicity at the level of being and cosmology, and then sort of works its way down to cycle in terms of the total life of a human being, not only from birth to death, but from birth to rebirth, as it were, using the same basic cyclic pattern. And there, instead of potentiality, actuality, he's dealing with a principle of unity and a principle of multiplicity, waxing and waning in relation to one another. So it's a slightly different formulation, befitting a different level of his own consciousness, but also remaining consistent and also resting very much in terms of the idea of cycle. Now, that was something that Rudyard said last night that goes with this in a personal sense, the idea of transforming any event in one's life, any happening, into a phase of a process of, in a sense, ritualizing events where they are no longer just simply what they seem to be, but they represent a happening that is happening through them. Rudyard calls that becoming translucent to the process to the light of meaning. I often talk about it that the event is the costume or the dress or the vehicle in which an action occurs in one's life. So, in this concept of the cycle, which of course, it is all pervading. It goes back to the idea of the seed and the leaves and the fall. That came originally in the context of cycle, and that was the root of everything. It also came up in terms of Rudyard's own life. When he came to America and he had this idea of cycle and new seeds and new American civilization, and nobody responded to that. He developed for himself at that time in his life, his motto was per igne ad lucem, which is through fire unto light, which means you gotta get in the frying pan through the fire. The idea of harmony through conflict, but realizing that he had to go through that period, that even if nobody listened to him, he had to do it, period. Even if it bore no fruit, he had to do it. When I first came to live with Rudyard, one time I said to him, because we were talking about his early life, and he was saying how he was in Greenwich Village and copying music for 35 cents a page and freezing and going to the automat and eating shredded wheat, which was what he survived on because it was inexpensive. And I said to him, well, but didn't you ever think of wiring home for money? It's a reasonable thing. I mean, I thought about it. There wasn't transatlantic telephone at the time, but there was wires, you know. And he said, he looked at me as if I had asked this totally bizarre question. And he said, no, it never crossed my mind. And I said, well, what did cross your mind? I mean, what were you thinking about that there you were starving in a garret in Greenwich Village? And he said, well, he said, really, he said, I thought I had something to do. And he said, I thought about it. And I realized that maybe I was crazy. Maybe this was this is the kind of dark night of the soul anyone like that has to go through. And he said, maybe this was a delusion, and maybe I didn't have anything to do, and it was some kind of an aggrandizement. And he said, in which case, I would die. And what would it matter? A crazy person died. It wouldn't matter. But that if what my intuition was correct, that somehow, and these were his exact words, somehow I would be survived. That something would survive him. That some kind of way would appear. Now, I find this important in the sense that oftentimes, I know what has brought many of us into this is this tremendous sense of potentialities. But one of the things I find, for example, in astrological counseling, and when people come saying, tell me my dharma, how do I actualize my potentialities? Rudyard there was talking about potentialities, and he was talking about his potentialities. So you've got this statement there, my potentialities, but you can put the accent on the my or on the potentialities. And for Rudyard, the accent was really on the potentialities, that these are potentialities that within the context of a cyclic point of view, if it's the cycle of my life, which is a phase within a larger cycle, then these potentialities have meaning within this larger frame of reference. They are not mine. In fact, the sense of my is a property of the potentialities. And from that point of view, then, the main thing is to understand the relationship between this set of potentialities one calls and feels mine and the collective cycle in which it is operating. And that's what he has tried to talk about in terms of culture and in terms of developing this new mind that is free from the domination by one's particular culture. I think this was what he was getting at last night in answer to a question about when you sever yourself from your culture. What do you do then? Are you cultureless? Do you choose another culture, or does another culture develop? It's been a great shock to me and to many people. watching through the 60s that, you know, that the New Age didn't start in 1975. It just didn't happen. And, no, I think that's, and I'll tell stories on myself. I mean, I thought in the 60s, you know, surely, and I was not alone. There are many other people that, some of whom you would be surprised at, people who are friends and who are writers and thinkers in their own right, who through the 70s had a very hard time realizing that the New Age was not going to happen, you know, right then. And that then this time frame began to stretch out into decades. Now I'm comfortable with centuries. That's okay. But basically the formation... basically the formation of this kind of culture takes centuries, and it's not going to happen in our lifetimes. There's a saying, I always remember Ira Progoff in this very room quoting from the sayings of the fathers, that just because one cannot finish the task does not mean that it is not incumbent upon one to start.
This is the end of Understanding Rudyard Part 2 by Leila Rayal. The preceding audio is copyrighted by Leila Rudyard Hill and was brought to you by Rita, the Rudyard Institute for Transpersonal Activity. Learn more about Rita or contribute to the ongoing legacy of Dane Rudyard at www.rudyardinstitute.org. For the complete selection of free downloads of audio presentations by Dane Rudyard, visit www.rudyardaudioarchives.com.